Recording in progress.
Good morning, all. It's 10 o'clock as I have it. Welcome to everybody. Let me start on a sad note. Our condolences, obviously, to MPI, National Treasury's legal advisor, and who is piloting this bill on their behalf, amongst other people who are here from Treasury. Our condolences to her. She lost her mother last week. And we wish her and her family the very best in this difficult time. Secondly, two quick announcements. One is that I told you via the WhatsApp chat group of our committee with Mr. Jomo Nyambi, the House Chair, to attend the Parliamentary Network on the World Bank and then the spring meetings of the IMF and World Bank. That normally happens, as I was made aware, in April and October. I will give you a report on that within the next 2 weeks or so. It was a very useful meeting. And for me personally, particularly useful because I also happened to join the SACP Politburo delegation that went to China. This had nothing to do with the taxpayers or with Parliament. Although we did discuss how bad Dennis Ryder is with the Chinese leadership, and they've agreed to ban him from using Huawei, any TikTok and any such instruments. So Dennis, you will be suffering because I know you don't use iPhones and what's the other one? The South Korean one and so on. So anyway, that I will not give you a report on, nor are you interested. But what does overlap is how these two world powers see the international stage. It's fundamentally different and very interesting. For those of you interested from the ANC in particular, we can talk offline. Having said that, we have the team from Treasury here. We have the Financial Matters Amendment Bill. Colleagues, you know that we've got lots of bills this quarter, this year. Well, this financial year, if you like. You also know very well that from your whips, I think all parties are more or less reaching agreement when I last heard, which is more than 2 weeks ago, but I don't know where things are now, that we're going to have a truncated, which was always the case last year, at the end of a term, five-year term of Parliament. And I think next year we're hardly going to be in Parliament except to take the SONA and the budget. And I think our committee will be stuck for a little while, but the rest of Parliament will be, I think, not functioning in the sense that people are out there campaigning. Okay, over then to the National Treasury team. Any apologies before we move on? Inkululeko, anybody missing?
Good morning, Chairperson and members. Yes, Chair, we have three apologies. Mr. Nja to Ms. Mabarekgane and Mr. Moletsane. They will be joining late, Chairperson.
Fine. Let's hand over then to the National Treasury. Please, whoever's responsible, who's coordinating on your side, will take us through with your team.
Good morning, Chairperson. MP von Square. Thank you for the words of condolences. It's appreciated. I'm going to do the presentation and to explain the bill contains amendments to a number of acts, and therefore it's our team leading on this matter. So I'm just trying to shift the slides.
Honourable Chair,
yes,
sorry.
Is that Dickeledi?
Yes, can we request the presenter to speak direct to the mic or raise her voice, please?
Okay.
Okay, I'll do so. Thank you, Chairperson. Is this better?
Much better.
Yeah. Okay, good. We all are fine. Thank you.
Okay, yes, the bill deals with amendments to a number of acts. So in this case, our unit is leading on a matter, but I'll indicate what the bill deals with. And now firstly, we did consult obviously within government and government agencies on the bill, because it involves the Government Pension Administration Agency, also the Financial and Fiscal Commission, as well as the Land Bank and the IRBA. They are a representative from IRBA, or two from IRBA in the meeting as well. And my colleague from the Accountant General's office is also present in the meeting. Now, you will see the list of bills that's being amended, the Associated Institutions Pension Fund Act, the Temporary Employees Pension Fund Act, the Military Pensions Act, the Government Employees Pension Law, the Financial and Fiscal Commission Act, then the Land Bank Act, and then the Audit Profession Act, the Principal Act. And then the bill also contains a proposed amendment to the Audit Profession Amendment Act. Now, we followed a normal process of prior to tabling of the bill in Parliament. We published the bill for comment for a period of 1 month early in 2002. And after considering comments, we made some technical revisions to the bill. And then it had to go through the cluster processes of DGs within government. And then it finally cabinet approved the bill in August 2022 for tabling in Parliament. And then it was tabled in September in the National Assembly. And to explain the purpose of the amendments, now, firstly, the Associated Pension Fund Act and the Temporary Employees Fund Act, we would note that these are quite old acts. And there was a lot of technical revisions just to align it with the current administration of these two acts by the Minister of Finance. And then also similar amendments to indicate who are the relevant head of department. And then in some cases where it required consultation with the Minister of Finance, which is no longer relevant because he is the minister that's administering the act. And then there was also references to other ministers that should be consulted, and the terminology for those were updated. Then in clause 1 to 5 of the bill, you would see the amendments to the Associated Institutions Pension Fund Act, and in clauses 6 to 9 contain amendments to the Temporary Employees Pension Fund Act. Now, the purpose of the amendments to the Military Pensions Act, some of the committee members may remember, we did, there was an amendment in 2019 to specifically recognize life partners to also claim benefits. Now, at the time, the amendment was not made retrospective, and after considering a submission by one particular affected member, And we sought advice from the state law advisors. The position that we proposed to the committee is that this amendment should be made retrospective, so that it applies to life partners from the date of the effective date of the interim constitution of 1993, so that it should be 27 April of 1994. Then there is a period then allowed for affected persons to come forward and register and then also to submit claims. So they must do so within 12 months after the effective date of this amendment. Then the amendments to the Government Employees Pension Fund Act, that's dealt with in clauses 11 to 17. Now, the main reason for this change is because the Associated Institution Pension Fund Act is proposed to be incorporated or amalgamated into the GEPF. And then as a consequence, then the so-called clean break principle will also apply to members of this particular fund. And just reminding members, because this is an amendment that was made to the GEPF law some time ago, that it means that when a spouse, that the spouse may claim a pension interest immediately upon divorce or dissolution of a customary marriage, and they don't have to wait until the member become entitled to the portion of the pension. And this clean break principle was as a result of a court judgment that was made to the GP law. Now, just to explain briefly about the Associated Institution Pension Fund, the current membership is 2,353, and the Temporary Employee Pension Fund has 8 members. Now, the TPF amalgamation into the GPF, on advice we received, it doesn't require amendment to legislation, so that will be done without the need to change legislation. And just an update on the current membership of the GPF, it currently has 1.4 million members. And then I'm providing a bit more detail, because there was before the Standing Committee of Finance, one of the stakeholders that made the submission was querying, you know, what would be the impact of amalgamating these two funds into the GPF. Now, there was actuarial evaluations done that was arranged by GEPO. Both of these funds are fully funded with assets values above 100% funding levels. And the position in the reports that were submitted, which we will also share with the committee, is that the net financial impact of the amalgamation of these funds will favor the GPF if all the reserves are transferred to the GBF, and that is what the actuaries actually recommended. The amendment to the Financial and Fiscal Commission, now the purpose of this amendment was essentially to advance good governance, because currently the CEO of the commission is also the secretary of the commission. And the proposed amendment was to omit the role of the CEO as its secretary, and that this is not something that was proposed, that it should not be legislated on, and that the commission should make its own appointment of a secretary. But the proposal is that it shouldn't be the CEO of the commission. Now, subsequently, we detected that we made an error by including this amendment in the bill, because amendments to the FFC Act must be in a 76 bill and not in a 75 bill. So our minister did wrote to the chair of the Standing Finance of the National Assembly, and also copied the chair of this committee, requesting that this amendment be rejected and it should be put in a different bill. Now, we did inform the FFC, and as soon as we bring a 76 bill, this amendment will be included in that bill. The amendments to the Land Bank Act, the purpose of this amendment is to align, firstly, the administration of the Act with that it's now the Minister of Finance, because in the past it was the Minister of Agriculture. and also to align it with the provisions of the Companies Act of 2008. Because the Land Bank Act was passed before the Companies Act of 2008. Now, the 2008 Companies Act repealed most of the 1973 Act, including the provisions relating to diesel management of companies, and it was replaced by provisions providing for business rescue. And also on this matter, we received advice that the business rescue in the Companies Act did not replace by implication the diesel management in the Land Bank Act. And therefore, it's proposed that in the bill that the judicial management for the Land Bank be replaced by business rescue in terms of the Companies Act. But then just one further, some commentators raised the concern as to whether liquidation provisions in the Companies Act would apply to the Land Bank. Now, our view is that it will not, because the Section 44 of the Land Bank Act provides that the bank may not be bound up except by or in terms of an act of parliament. So in all, if there's ever, hopefully not, a decision to wind up the Land Bank, it will require an act of parliament to do so. So those are the Land Bank amendments. Now, regarding the amendments to the Ordinary Profession Act of 2005, there are two amendments, and I think we did indicate to Parliament before that there is a more comprehensive review being undertaken of the Act. But these two amendments were considered urgent at the time and therefore included in the bill. Now, the purpose of the amendment is firstly to strengthen the sanctions for auditors admitting guilt of serious conduct. And then also to adjust the powers of the enforcement committee when an auditor admits guilt. Now, even in the enforcement committee views that conduct does not warrant a sanction of deregistration or disqualification from registration as an auditor, then the admission of guilt process must be followed. But if it warrants such a serious sanction, such as deregistration or disqualification, then it must refer the matter to the disciplinary committee for sanctioning. Now, that is the first amendment that's proposed in relation to the auditing profession. The second one is, I hope I can explain it well, but there was an amendment in the 2021 Amendment Act that provided that alleged contracts, the processes applicable to alleged improper conduct committed before or after after the Amendment Act took effect in April 2021. Now, it is proposed that the alleged improper conduct not dealt with before the effective date of the Amendment Act in April 2021 must be dealt with in terms of the 2005 Act after its amendment. Because the amendment that was in the 2021 Act basically set the same processes and committee processes that was applicable before the Amendment Act applied. So it's proposed now instead of that, that the committee system applicable from the date of the amendment, 2021 Amendment Act, should apply. Then further, it's proposed, and just to clarify, not proposed, but that the sanctions that may be imposed will still be those that were applicable before the Amendment Act or the Principal Act took effect. Now, regarding this amendment, in the minister's letter to both chairs of committees, senior counsel advice was obtained by IRBA, and we also considered it, and they found another way to deal with alleged improper conduct by auditors committed and not finalized before the 2021 Amendment Act. Now, the legal advice source indicated that IRBA may establish an interim disciplinary committee to deal with these cases in terms of powers that's in the current act. And therefore, it is proposed that in consideration of the bill by Parliament, that the amendment proposed in clause 22 is not required anymore and that it should be rejected. So this will be considered by the Standing Committee of Finance and when they deal with the bill. And I think we are responding to the public comment that's scheduled for next week. That's it from me, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, MP. Issues for consideration for the committee? Who wants to raise what? I don't see any hands up. Do you, Nkululeko?
No, Chairperson, I don't see any hands either.
Okay. So, MP, my own views are at this stage. Obviously, I have to look at the bill clause by clause. I seek to do that usually after I get a briefing overview of the policy and other issues. From what I can tell colleagues at this stage, most of these amendments are technical and, to me, it seems not controversial. About the auditing one, obviously the first issue that arises is, like, it's only 2021, how long ago is that? 2 years ago that we made these amendments. They were on the agenda, you'll recall, it'd be around 2018, 2019. And then we're amending it again. What does this suggest about the quality of legislation you're bringing to Parliament? I don't mean you personally. I mean National Treasury. This is an issue, by the way, that the older chairs notice that over the years, the quality of the legislation being brought to Parliament by the executive in general, it's like of a lower and a lower quality, really. I'm not speaking about you specifically. You're one of the better departments, it seems to me. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, I'm not sure that I understood you, so I think maybe I'll defer my question. But if I did understand you, what are you really saying here when it comes to the sanctions? That when we amended the bill in 2021, you see, what I recall clearly, as will Dikeledi probably, was Irba kept saying, and so did we as a committee, Veskoff at the time, that the sanctions being imposed on people found guilty of transgressing the law was far too mild. It was a slap on the wrist. It's worth committing the sanctions if nothing really happens to you. So we wanted tougher sanctions. The issue came up, you'll recall, as it always does, do the sanctions apply retrospectively or not? I cannot recall for the life of me what was said. Usually, it seems that unless there are very specific circumstances otherwise, you can't really retrospectively apply, if I'm right, MP, the lawyer. I don't know if our lawyer is here from Parliament, so I didn't see him yet. Can't apply, you know, retrospectively. But there are cases where it seems to have happened, if my recollections of my experiences here is accurate or are accurate. So what are we saying here? That the sanctions that will apply in the 21 Act were tougher, but will they apply for transgressions before the Act came into effect? Or only for those after the Act came into effect? Is that what the issue is? I didn't follow what you said. Can you explain more simply, please? It's me, maybe, just me. Presumably the others understood. So if it's just me, I can talk to you offline as well. Because nobody asked about it, so I take it they understood it. So if members feel that you don't want this question answered, yeah, it's fine. I can talk to MP over the phone. Because it seems like this meeting on the drawdown closed much quicker than I or anybody planned. But there we are. Is there anybody else who wants to raise anything before MP comes back?
Yes, Chair, Mr. Muletsane.
Welcome, my friend.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me acknowledge the presentation. I just want to check on this bill. On the issue when I divorce and then my spouse claim a portion of my pension, then after the amount has been paid to my spouse, is it done and dusted, or there will be a penalty that I'll have to pay on monthly basis as if there's a loan that I've taken from my pension? Or if my spouse has taken that portion, then it is removed, then it is closed. I don't pay anything on monthly basis, or I have to repay that amount back to my pension. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah, this issue has arisen repeatedly. Who else? I don't see anybody else. Right. Okay, go for it.
Whoops, sorry.
Oh, you want to speak? Okay, go ahead, Dennis.
Sorry, and I've got the wrong filter on the back. Give me one moment. Beg your pardon. Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, everybody. Yeah, just relating your opening comments, Chair, I think that it would have been nice to know that the spring meeting visit was happening. But yeah, anyway, not sure how that one happened. Yeah, so I think we appreciate the inputs on the bill. I do note that the actual text of the bill wasn't circulated to members, but I managed to get it myself. There's some work that I still need to do in it. I note the two comments from the Treasury about the two clauses that are to be extracted or removed from it. But I think that generally the thrust of the bill is constructive. I do know that pension funds have been a target in the past, and there was quite a long case, and I've got the file here in my office. I'm just juggling a couple of things here. I haven't got it off the shelf yet, but there was some serious issues where the FSCA's predecessor was involved in some skullduggery relating to the pension funds, and particularly some of those older pension funds that had become defunct and left with lots of money that was still lying around in those pension funds. Do these amendments go any way towards fixing those potential conflicts and those issues that arose? There was an attorney involved at the time who was appointed across dozens of different pension funds as an administrator, and ended up paying himself substantial amounts of money without actually delivering any benefit. Do these amendments address that in any way? And I apologize because it's a little bit vague what I'm saying, but I'm sure that those involved directly in the process will understand what the one I'm referencing. I'll get the details in the interim. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Anybody else?
I don't see any hands.
Okay, thanks. Can I just ask you, MP, the letter that was sent to the two chairs, which was distributed to committee members, that actually, what was the response of SCOF? I mean, presumably they agreed to delete those clauses for now. The one will come back in the new bill you're bringing before us, because of the classification of the bill, right? So what was the attitude of SCOF to that? Secondly, what changes has SCOF made to the bill that you originally submitted to them based on their own consideration of the policy issues and what part have emerged from public hearings? Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to respond, hopefully, well, some of the questions I can't respond, but I'll indicate how we will deal with it. And maybe at the end, if I can just ask my colleagues from IRBA also to come in on the proposed amendments regarding the Audit Profession Act. I don't know, this is a public forum, and the two amendments that we are proposing to related to ordinary profession Obviously, it's a bit of embarrassment to me, and it seems that the one I think was a misunderstanding between us and IRBA about what the transitional provision means. And then the second amendment, I think it was simply of a case where they wanted to proceed with dealing with the cases that's still outstanding. And they found another way based on senior counsel advice to do it. So I don't think that, not to say more about that, but I do think, this is on a lighter note, I think we still have a good track record in Treasury in terms of in our legislation. But yeah, the second area on the FECA was, I literally only realized it in December last year, only after the bill was tabled, that there was an error in terms of the tagging of the bill. Then just on the sanctions, I'm sure IBA will be able to explain it better, but my understanding of the amendment or the amendment that we have in the bill is that in the case of the Enforcement Committee, they can only introduce certain types of sanctions, and someone can use admission of guilt process as an escape to only be subjected to these minor sanctions where it's actually a very serious transgression. And therefore, the provision that if the committee is of the view that it warrants a more serious sanction, then it must be referred to the disciplinary committee for sanctioning. Then as to your question on the what sanctions may be imposed, now, in law, you can't impose a harsher sanction that was applicable at the time of committing the improper conduct. So the harsher sanctions that's introduced by the 2021 Amendment Act would only apply to improper conduct committed after that Amendment Act took effect in April 2021. Then on the question that you asked lastly about the SCOF's reaction to the letter, the committee hasn't met since we sent the letter. We had the briefing, they had public hearings, and we are responding next week to the public submissions. And then we will also deal with the letter, explaining, what we propose in the letter to the committee. So at this stage, there's no changes that's been proposed, except for those two from our side. I didn't want to go into the content of the submissions, but they were generally positive. There was one from COSATU, which they raised before, is the compulsory rotation rule. But they supported the other comments, and there was a submission from about details about the amalgamation of these two funds into the GPF. Would it have a negative financial impact? But we shared the reports with the stakeholder and the committee. And then there was one written submission from Deloitte that we will also be responding to. Then on the question about the clean break principle, I want to ask if we can maybe request that when we brief the committee again, or we can even do it in advance through a note from GPA, so that they can explain exactly how it works, as the member requested, whether would that mean, once it's paid out, it's done and dusted, or there's still a penalty payable by the member at the later stage when I exit the fund or over time. Then on the question regarding the matter that the FECA dealt with, those were other pension funds and not these two, what I would call government type of pension funds. And as you would have seen, they're very small funds. We can also provide details of the members. I think the CSIR is one of the members, or they was. It may be historical membership of people that already retired, that are members of these funds. So they're quite small. And as far as we know, there's no difficulties that was similar to what was dealt by the FECA. And I think also the reports that we will send to the committees from the actuaries would assist in this regard. sort of, if the chair, with your permission, can maybe Gillian or Rebecca from the IRBA, if they want to come in on the auditing profession amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. This is Imre from IRBA. I'm joined by Gillian and Rebecca. Chair, just to reiterate what MP has said, firstly, that the fines in terms of the new Amendment Act, April 2021, is not retrospective, meaning that transgressions at the time before that date would still need to be, the fines would still need to be done in terms of the old Act. However, the two amendments are really small amendments. The first one is really to strengthen the process around auditors admitting guilt. And the second item, the second amendment, really, in January, the board took a decision based on legal counsel that at the time there was no certainty around how long the bill would take. And we had 16 matters in terms of the old Act that we needed to finalize. So the board found another way, an easier way to deal with those 16 cases in terms of the old Act, which really at that point then rendered the amendment in terms of this bill moot. But maybe, Chair, if I can just ask Gillian to add and Rebecca to add on those two items.
Thanks, Chair. In respect of the first amendment, I think there was really not an error in the Act, but what had happened is that when we were drafting the rules to the APA, our disciplinary rules, we consulted with senior counsel in relation to the rules and how we had drafted them. And at that point, counsel had advised that if an auditor admits guilt, the way subsection D, section 4, subsection D in section 49 is written is such that the auditor would have to receive an admission of guilt process and that he would have to receive a fine, irrespective of how serious the sanction is. However, our reading of the Act as it currently stands was different in that we considered subsection 1 to section 49, which said the enforcement committee has either the power to refer to a DC or to follow the to refer to a DC if they figured that the misconduct warrants a more harsher sanction. However, due to the differences with senior counsel, we thought it best to pursue the amendment to provide clarity that where the enforcement committee feels that the misconduct is such that it would the respondent is a risk to the profession, then they would then refer the matter to the disciplinary committee, which can impose a harsher sanction if they find the respondent guilty. And that's basically why we are back before the committee in relation to that. However, in relation to the second aspect, it was clear at the time that the amendment said respondents charged prior to the amendments to the Act must be then dealt with as per the old Act. The challenge we then faced is that we reconstituted the disciplinary committee at that time to remove registered auditors as per the new Act. However, now what that meant is that we could not then prosecute the 16 RAs who were charged before because we no longer had a committee that complied with the requirements of the Act prior to the amendment. And so we sought that amendment, but having noted that the amendment by January had taken approximately 18 months and respondents were now starting to query what's happening with that matter. The matter is just hanging and we anticipated that it's going to affect the effectiveness of the sanctions at the time when the matter actually go before the disciplinary hearing. We then consulted with senior counsel as to alternative ways of dealing with the matter and counsel advised that we could use section 19 in relation to delegation of powers and section 20, which relates to the establishment of committee to establish a transitional disciplinary committee, which would comply with the requirements prior to the amendments of the Act, and that will deal with those matters. That was presented to the board, and the board felt that it was a more better way of dealing with the matter. It would be quicker, and therefore the board moved to establish a transitional disciplinary committee, which is now ready to hear those 16 matters. Hence, we are now requesting the withdrawal of that particular amendment, Chair.
Okay, anybody else wants to add? I don't see any other hand up. Okay.
No hand.
Okay. And then are there follow-ups, members? Nope, I don't see any. So one of the issues that I wanted to raise, MP, was does this bill in any way affect the issues that have been raised every now and then by the widows who turn up to Parliament? Dennis Ryder and I met them physically because they were in Cape Town. Our own work suggests that they knew full well that the meeting was a virtual meeting, but let's not go there now. It's the issues. And we had mandated the SCOFFES to, in its quarterly review of progress on the fiscal framework, which will come up shortly, deal with what they've done about the individual cases concerned. But do any of the changes here impact on them in any way? Because they are widows of people receiving pensions, and Moletsane, Simon, overlapped with the issues that arise there. Secondly, do you know when this bill is going to be passed by SCOF? It's an unfair question to ask you, but you know, since I haven't had a chance to speak to my co-chair, because this bill, we're being briefed on it, but we don't have a final version. So what will happen, MP, is when you come back to brief us on the bill, it won't have to be on the whole bill, simply on anything that's changed from what you presented here today. But the question mainly is, do you know when they're going to pass the bill? I will check with the co-chair, and no doubt Nkululeko will check with Alan. But when we offered this date, the program on the SCOF side suggested they would have passed this bill, as I understand it. That's why we had this on our agenda. But giving this briefing is helpful. We don't have to go through the whole thing again. I can't see that they're going to make many, many changes. So most of this will still apply. And I can't see why the request the minister has put to them and to us, but to them in the first instance, because if they do what the minister's letter suggests, then it won't be an issue for us. But there we are on those two issues. Do you want to say anything before we draw to a close? Because there's not much to take further right now. What I also need to mention is that Poppy Ntaka, our researcher, will obviously, as she does with all bills, do an overview of the bill for us and raise some of the questions that have been raised at today's meeting. But maybe, Poppy, you should wait till we get the final text of the bill. But when you do that overview, the week before we look at the final text of the bill that's got to the National Assembly and been adopted, you will also include the issues raised here and also offer further questions you think the committee might want to raise with Treasury. Anything members want to say before I hand back to Treasury? I don't see any hands up. Ah, there's Mr. Jutoy. Yes, sir.
Good morning, Chair and honourable members. Chair, I do not well. This definitely doesn't relate to the bill that's on the table today for discussion, but it does relate to National Treasury and the complete calculations for the SADC and the CMA that we've requested time and time again, but we haven't been provided with it yet. Did send a mail to you as well. I know that the State Girl has also contacted you, but to avail, we haven't received any feedback. If you could look into the matter and perhaps request Treasury to act on the, as a matter of urgency. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, no, it's not related to this. I'll come back to that. Can we deal with the bill? The issues in the bill first, MP. I'll come back to that.
Thank you, Chairperson. The bill has no impact on the group of widows that you referred to. So it's the only amendments relate to the amalgamation and the updates to those acts. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't have any impact. Then on your second question, the SCOF date for final adoption of the bill by the committee is 16 May. And then, as you know, it must still go to the assembly for voting or passing the bill. So, but that's the date that we received from them on Friday.
Okay. All right. That means we have to make changes possibly to our program, but I'll discuss that in the colloquium and bring it back to you. Funny, are you raising the issue of what now? This is the SACU matter, is it? Is it SADC matter?
That's correct, Chair. The SADC and the CMA payments that happened, and we requested this information on the previous meeting. Prof. Yanni Rousseau, he stressed the matter. He sent you messages.
Yes, I remember all that, yes.
All that, yes.
Now,
Treasury did respond, but they didn't provide the actual calculations,
yes.
The actual figure.
Yeah. Yes. Firstly, Firstly, I've repeatedly pointed out to Professor Rousseau and his colleague who contacted me that they should really be dealing with the chair of the Standing Committee on Finance. There's no provincial issue here. They should not write letters to me. In fact, I will be contacting him shortly. Which they don't also send to Joe Maswangani. The norm is it's handled by the Standing Committee on Finance. I did it for 5 years, not Mr. De Beer, who chaired this committee before me. And those are issues that are processed by them. But I will attend to the matter. Now, there's something you need to understand. In China, you cannot access your Gmail. In China, you cannot access... You cannot use any of the search engines that are used in the West. It's got particularly bad since Trump banned TikTok and Huawei and the five IR processes that were going on, that Huawei was considerably advanced over the West for the first time, as people would admit, since the Industrial Revolution. It's not in the West, but a country in the East that's leading a digital revolution that is equivalent to the Industrial Revolution of Britain. So, you know, there's this trade wars, as you know. So my WhatsApp, you got intermittently, I was there for 8-9 days, and I've got a load of constituency cases, and I've repeatedly spoken to Professor Rousseau, and he doesn't listen. So you know what? I will deal with it in the way the norms provide for. But this is not an excuse for Treasury not to comply. They did reply, but they didn't give all the information. I, not SCOF, contacted Momaniat 3 times. So I can't do more than I can do. I even suggested we're going to hold the minister before the joint committees if we don't get answers to these questions. So I got back. And I've not had the time because the letter from Professor Rousseau is going to be sent back to him to be addressed to both chairs and to be done properly, as he well knows. Secondly, I cannot prioritize this matter over the hundreds of other matters I've had to attend to. So I will attend to it in the next 48 hours. And I will once again say to Mr. Professor Rousseau, he should do the correct thing. So, but that does not excuse Treasury. You are right. I have never failed to extract from Treasury or any other department in all these years what Parliament is entitled to. We have even in the past, not with Treasury, gone to Parliament's Legal Services Unit to draft letters for us to threaten further action and referred in one case a matter to the Speaker some years ago, all of which meant that before any further action could be taken, the department concerned gave us the information. No member of the executive, nobody from the executive can override Parliament's powers to information. As we've repeatedly said to them, and you have been in this committee for years now, and I've said it, and I'm not going to repeat the whole story. Unless they can give us a lawyer's letter, which we will refer to our lawyers, to explain why they cannot provide certain information. The speaker, Frini Jinwala, explained to us, and she's right. It has come up subsequently, funny. There are certain things the executive has the right to reserve for itself, and there are laws within which it can do that and norms. The test, finally, is a court of law. But we have never had a problem, and I will pursue this matter within 48 hours, but I'm not going to prioritize it. The first thing I'm going to do is contact him to tell him to write a letter to both chairs. But you are right, the information will be made available, must be made available, and there's no choice. And Treasury has no excuse not to provide it. And if they can't provide it, then they must provide a letter, which you will get. Nobody hides anything here. We can't do that. No chair can hide anything anyway. It's not right. Okay, having said that, that issue will be attended to, Fani. Nothing prevents you from writing to the minister and DG also to complain on behalf of your party. Okay, that said, the meeting's over for now. We will come back to this bill probably towards the end of May, sadly, which is worrying me because there are lots of bills coming. MB, can you tell us if you have the latest score because it keeps changing? How many bills are we going to get in this financial year? Do you know?
The other bill that we hope to table is the public procurement bill.
I was about to ask you about that.
And then the conduct of financial institutions bill.
My God, you know when that bill was first proposed to us? I'm not blaming you. You don't decide the policy issues, right? Ask the lady if she remembers. 2017, Kofi, you all said before the term ends. I hope it comes. But the one that really I know the co-chair feels very strongly about, as do I, as do many in the NC, is the public procurement bill. Now, that was meant to be tabled by the end of March. When I last spoke to the co-chair, he said, no, he got an assurance, if I recall correctly, it will be submitted before the end of March. Now, what is it? It's first few days of May, 2nd of May. So when do you think that will be submitted?
Chair, we are currently before cabinet in a very intense engagement on the bill.
So it's actually tabled in cabinet, it's being processed at the moment. So you have a bill which you've taken to cabinet.
Yes.
Yeah. But your anticipation is within the next month or so. I'm not going to hold you by it. But
if it goes well, maybe next Wednesday, but we never know.
I don't know what your smile means.
We are also eager to get it into parliament.
It's a big bill. You know, unlike this bill, it'll be a very big bill and allows a lot of public interest. And so it should. Okay. Thank you very much, everybody. We'll meet next Tuesday in this committee and obviously meet tomorrow with appropriations. Thank you all.